I love a good baptism highlight video. My name is Anthony, for those of you who don't know me. That was from our baptisms just a couple weeks ago. We're celebrating those who are taking the step of baptism the last Sunday of this month. It'll be the 28th. So if it's been on your heart and you've been feeling that nudge, or you want to talk about what it means to take that step, I encourage you, go to check in on your app. Click that I want to talk to someone about what it means to follow in that step of baptism, and we'll make sure to follow up with you this week to be able to do that. Well, welcome. Like I said, my name is Anthony. We are in week two of our summer series. We're calling it Remix, right? We're remixing some of the songs, and really, why do we call it Remix? Well, what is a remix, right? A remix, you're not creating anything new, right? You're going back to the original. You're giving it a fresh look, a fresh beat. And really, that's what we're trying to do. We're going back to the core values, the fundamental beliefs that the church and that Hoboken Grace was founded on, and to really find out what this thing called the church was meant to be and what it's all about. Because we have a mission. Right, it's a mission we say every week. Justin just said it. We have a mission of helping people find their way back to God. And the way that we do that is through our core values. These are our fundamental beliefs that when you look at the early church and when you look at what God was calling the church to be, that is what these things, these fundamental beliefs are. And so we believe that these six fundamental beliefs that we're going to be walking through one each week is what God is calling us to. Because truth be told, if you think about it, we've lost a little something when it comes to the church. I mean, if this is the greatest news somebody's ever heard, right? The message of Jesus Christ, something has happened along the way where we've become a little nervous to talk about it. And when you go back to the beginning of this thing called the church, we find that there was this unstoppable force that brought this message of Jesus Christ, that we're even talking about it still today. And it changed the world, and it continues to change the world. And you know, it's interesting that it got as big as it did and it spread as quickly as it did, is because when it started, there were people, there were empires that were trying to squelch this message. Literally, the Roman Empire, which was ruling the largest empire of this time, was doing everything in its power to squelch this message of Jesus Christ. And while we don't have an empire that's trying to squelch this, and we do have a freedom of faith, there is still something that makes it a little nerve-wracking when it comes to talking about our faith. And, you know, it's interesting. When I first became a believer and I walked into this relationship with Jesus, I went on a date with someone, and the date must have been going well, because she's like, we should go see a movie after this, after we had dinner, and it was getting kind of late, and I said to her, I was like, well, you know, maybe another time, I gotta get up early for church. And she started laughing, and then she went back down to looking for a movie time. And I said, no, I'm serious. I gotta get up early. I serve, you know, on the kids team. And she was like, you go to church? And I was like, I don't know if I should be offended by that, but yeah. And she's like a Christian one? I said, yeah. And she put her phone down, and she looked at me, and she goes, you know, there's a lot of negative connotation around being a Christian and going to church. And I said, okay, here we go. But it's true, right? Like we can identify a little bit with that story. Whether you identify with me or you identify with her in that story. And some of you are here today and you're like, I don't even know how I got here. I don't even know why I agreed to be here. I don't go to church. I mean, they said bagels and donuts and coffee. I said, oh my, why not? But I don't know. And if we're honest, there's some of us who have been in this relationship with Jesus Christ for a number of years, or we've been walking with him for a while, and even we've become a little bit jaded. Even we've become a little bit disillusioned. So my question is, why do I feel so self-conscious telling people I go to church? Or why do we feel so self-conscious letting people know that? Letting people know that we believe in God. Letting people know that we have a faith in Jesus. And if this is truly the greatest news that the world has ever heard, and it's a message that we believe is going to change people's lives, then why are we so scared to talk about it? Well, that's one of the reasons why we call in this series remake. We got to go back to the beginning. We got to find out what it was that made this message so unstoppable and why we are still talking about it even to today. Something that we're going to give a fresh look at. We're going to go back. And in order to understand this thing called the church, we have to go back to the one who had the vision for it, the one who began it, the one who said, this is what the church is going to be. And that, of course, is Jesus. We have to go back to what Jesus was calling us to do, the one that had the vision, the one who said, this is what the church should be, and this is what the church should do. And I think one of the most striking things about Jesus' ministry, especially during the first century and the world that we're talking about and the society and the culture that we're talking about, is Jesus' interaction with people. Jesus was a social dude. Jesus socialized with everyone. Jesus went to dinner parties, gatherings, weddings. Jesus hung out, right? And the crazy thing about it is that Jesus did this in a time where people just didn't do that. Look at this passage in Mark chapter 2, verses 15 through 16. It says, while Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, that's the Gene guy, many tax collectors and... I'm just kidding, it's not. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples for there were many who followed him. Oh, no. I know, we're not even 10 minutes into the conversation and I've already said the word sinners. You're like, I have to go to the bathroom and then I'm just going to leave. No, before you do that, let me tell you what the context of this word sinners is here in the context of this message. So he's eating with sinners and tax collectors, and the Pharisees are the ones that say, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? And when you talk about the Pharisees, for those of you who don't know, the Pharisees were a strict sect in Judaism. They were strict. They believed to follow to the letter of the law. They believed in these rules. They were the real kind of churchy type who were judging you because you weren't following the rules, right? And maybe some of you know some church people like that. And so the Pharisees, right, they were these people who judged everything and told you what you could and couldn't do. And so they're looking at this Jesus character, and he's literally eating with these sinners. And sinners were anybody who were in Jewish society who didn't subscribe to the religious duties. They didn't follow the religious rules that were set forth by these religious leaders, by the Pharisees. And contrary to popular belief, they weren't all prostitutes and sinners. It says that most likely they were businessmen. They were people like you. They were people like me. They were people. They were Roman soldiers. They were Roman citizens who just didn't go to church. They just didn't follow the law that was set forth by the religious society. And because this was such a strong religious society, they were thought to be outcasts. And one of the things you didn't do with those outcasts, and one of the things you didn't do with those people, is you didn't have a meal with them. You definitely didn't sit and talk with them. Because in ancient society, when you have a meal with someone, it was this powerful image of sharing companionship with them. When you sat down with a meal with someone, in a sense, you were identifying with them and also, in a way, endorsing them. When you shared food and drink with someone, it was a powerful connection that you had with the other person, and it was a powerful statement that you shared with them. And I think Jesus, this powerful image that Jesus dined with these individuals who weren't part of the church, and they weren't part of the religious society, and those the holier than thous and the Pharisees begin to slander him in public, right? So Mark accounts of it, Matthew accounts of it. Matthew says in 11:19, he says, the Son of Man, and he's talking about Jesus, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, here's a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. The Son of Man, referring to Jesus, he's going out and he's eating and drinking with people. He must be a drunkard, and he must be just, you know, he's identifying himself with all of these tax collectors and all of these sinners. How dare he? And Jesus didn't give a rip. He didn't care what other people thought. In fact, this is so important that it is accounted in the Gospels, in all the Gospels of Jesus. Look at what it says in Luke. We've talked about Mark's account, Matthew's account. This is what Luke says, Luke 15, 1-2. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. They like this guy. This guy, we like this guy. There's that Jesus guy. Come on, man, pull up a chair. Tell us the story. They really liked him. And the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "The man welcomes sinners and eats with them." But why are we poo-pooing tax collectors so much? Well, understanding that in this Jewish culture, tax collectors, this is Roman-ruled, you know, society, and so the Romans put these tax collectors in there to collect taxes from the Jewish people, and most likely they weren't the nicest of people, so they would collect the taxes that were due to the Roman society, but they would also collect a little bit more and pocket the rest, so, you know, nobody likes tax collectors. So, anyway, I digress. That's why they don't like him. That's why he's looping them in with the tax collectors and the sinners. But one of my favorite examples of this is when Jesus interacts with a chief tax collector, right? The head tax collector in this particular town. And his name is Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus, his story is found in Luke 19. And this is how it starts. So Jesus enters Jericho and was passing, Jesus entered Jericho and was just passing through. A man there by the name of Zacchaeus, he was the chief tax collector and he was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him since Jesus was coming that way. Now when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Now this is an incredible, incredible testament to who Jesus Christ was and what he loved to do and what he was all about. First of all, you've got the Zacchaeus who said he's a chief tax collector, which means he probably was over all of the other tax collectors, and he probably was taking some of the skim off the top of their pot too, right? So this is like the original pyramid scheme. And so he's taking stuff off. He's not well liked in this town at all. And I think one of the most amazing things about this particular incident is that he said he was just passing through, right? Jesus entered Jericho and he was just passing through. He's passing through because he's on his way to the cross. He's on his way to getting captured. He's on his way to being convicted. All of this is literally a week before all of that starts to happen. And so this is literally a culmination of 3 years of Jesus' ministry in this beautiful picture that Jesus wanted to make sure you didn't miss. And Zacchaeus is this guy who is, as it says, he was not well liked by a lot of people. In fact, I would venture to say not anybody really liked Zacchaeus. And the crazy thing about this too is that he had heard probably from the other tax collectors in the other towns that this Jesus guy was coming, all right? This Jesus that's rumored to be the Messiah, which means he's going to rescue the Jewish people. And on top of that, he's willing to sit down and have a meal with me. He's willing to sit down and talk with me. And little Zacchaeus is, he says he was a wealthy man, which means, yeah, he probably had a lot of servants. He probably had a big house. But I would venture to say he didn't have any friends. And so for night after night, meal after meal, he's eating alone. And for the first time, maybe, just maybe, somebody will agree to have a meal with me. And so he goes to see Jesus, and he's too short, and he climbs this tree. And Jesus sees this man who is well-hated and well-disliked by the rest of the city and says, "Hey, come down. I'm going to go to your house." And I love how it says, Zacchaeus gladly went along with him. And in that encounter with Jesus, and Jesus goes to Zacchaeus' house, it says Zacchaeus' life is forever changed. He becomes one of the most generous men in the town. Literally, everything changes after his encounter with Jesus. His story concludes this way in Luke 19, 9 through 10. It says, Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house because this man too," and he's talking about Zacchaeus, "because this man too is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." See, there it is. Jesus refers to himself as the Son of Man who came for what? He came to seek and save the loss. If you get nothing else today, if you're here today and you take nothing else away from this, right? If you're here and you ever get disillusioned, or you ever get jaded, or you ever forget why the church was created, or if you're here today and you don't really believe in this whole thing yet, you're not really sure why you're still here, my prayer is that you will remember this one verse. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. Now, the reason Jesus referred to himself as the Son of Man, because he was identifying himself with the people that he came to save. We use this word, the word is called incarnation, right? Incarnation is a word that we typically talk about at Christmas, right? We talk about that God became man, he became a baby, and we celebrate the birth of Jesus. And so naturally we talk about it when Jesus was born, that is the moment that God became man. And the word incarnation literally means the embodiment of the Spirit. The embodiment of the Spirit. The Spirit in the body. Jesus, God the Father, became man in Jesus. We talk about that and we understand that, and people ask why. Why did God have to become man? Well, he says it specifically in Luke 19:10, for the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. That is why, in one sentence, God had to do and go through Jesus. There's a great way. This guy John Dixon puts it this way. He says, through his teaching, Jesus declared salvation. So through his life, through his teaching, everything that Jesus talked about was pointing towards the salvation of man, was pointing that God was going to save the world. Jesus declared salvation, and through his death and resurrection, which was just a week away, right? Through his death and resurrection, he would accomplish salvation. And through the generosity of his social life, he embodied that salvation. Well, what does that mean? It means that because of his teaching, he said, hey, salvation is coming. And not only is salvation coming, I'm going to do it. Through me, through my death and resurrection, he would accomplish salvation. And it wasn't going to just start there. He said, through the generosity of his social life, he embodied that salvation. He said, if this is truly a message for everyone, if God so loved the world, then Jesus embodied the generosity of that salvation through his social life. And he said, I'm going to sit and I'm going to be with everyone, because this message of Jesus Christ is for everyone. One can put it this way, right? The incarnate God incarnated himself with those who he sought to incarnate. Say that three times fast. Let's break this down real quick, all right? The incarnate God, that's Jesus, right? The incarnate God incarnated himself. That's the moment that God became man, all right? That's the moment, that's the incarnation of Jesus, right? He became one of them, and he would come into these parties, he would come into these people's houses, he would come to dinner with people, and he would be a welcomed addition, right? He incarnated himself into that culture's wise to those who he sought to incarnate, to those who he sought to incarnate his Spirit, all right? If incarnation is the embodiment of the Spirit, right? If Jesus is God incarnate, then he incarnates himself with us. He becomes one of us, right? Jesus becomes one of us in order to incarnate those who he's seeking and trying to save. See, when you walk into this relationship with Jesus, he doesn't just say, you're forgiven and sent on your merry way. He literally gives you his Spirit. That same Spirit that God incarnated Jesus with, right? That Jesus is the incarnate God, is used to incarnate you. Why? Because as those who have been delivered and saved from Jesus, we now have a responsibility. We now bear his image, so we have to seek and save the lost just like Jesus did. That's one of the reasons I love connection events, right? Connection events are something that we do here at Hoboken Grace. You can find them on the app, but they're really, the goal is to connect the unconnected, That's why we say, why do we do connection events? To connect the unconnected, right? We want people to, we want you to invite people. We want to hang out. We want to get to know one another. We want to be a part of this city. We want to be a part of this community because that's what Jesus told us to do. We've got to incarnate ourselves as God incarnate into the culture, right? There's this incredible thing that's happening. There's a couple guys in our church that have started this thing, and they did this on their own accord, but it's called the Community Dinners, and some of you may have seen it. It was on CBS this week, and they're doing this. Yeah, exactly. We have to go there. The rest of you must be NBC fans or something. It's a great thing. CBS, I mean, it was incredible this morning. The one of them singing up here, and another one was here earlier, but they do this incredible thing where they just get people together and have a meal. People from all different backgrounds, from all different neighborhoods. Once a month, they come together and they have a meal. That's exactly what Jesus Christ is talking about here. He's like, because of who you are, get together, have a meal with one another, share with one another, be the embodiment of what Jesus Christ is calling us to do. There's another connection event that we do every so often. I might be biased a little bit. It's one of my favorites called Improv for a Cause. Improv for a Cause is basically my opportunity to continue to do something I love, which is called improv. And I've been doing it for a very long time. And just because I went into ministry didn't mean I want to stop doing it. So I got the opportunity to produce a show here in Hoboken where I bring some of my comedian friends into Hoboken and we get to have a good time making people laugh, right? Woo! And I've been doing this with some of these guys. I've been performing with them in the city in some of these dingy theaters that should be condemned since 2007, right? And we just love doing it. We love hanging out. We love being with one another, right? And I'll never forget, we've been doing these events now for a couple of years, and some of the similar faces have been coming to it, right? And one of the guys, one night after we got done, I drove him down to the path, right? So he can get back on the path to go back to the city. And he said, Anthony, can I ask you a quick question? I said, sure, sure. He said, why does God dislike me? And I put the car into park and realized this was going to take a little while. But he opened the door. And so I just told him, I said, listen, man, like God's not angry at you. God doesn't dislike you. And I just was able to share my story and I was able to tell him about his and that God was just crazy about him. And he, you know, with tears in his eyes, he gave me a hug and he went and got on the path, and I'd love to tell you that I went and like baptized him in the Hudson, but that I wouldn't do that to somebody. He'd come out with like a third head, but I, you know, it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, it's a journey, and he's still asking questions, and he's still engaging, and he still loves to hang out. I mean, it's part of what I love that I get to do, and he just, God just opened that door. And another time I remember I was doing a show and this guy I had just met recently and we did our first show together and I hadn't really gotten into the whole like I work for a church thing yet in our relationship and after the show he's like, oh Anthony, you should come out and have a drink with us afterwards and it was a Saturday night and usually, you know, I have to get here at the crack of dawn because look, we didn't just wake up like this. Like there's an incredible amount of people that come here every morning to set this place up and create this experience for you. And I was like, no, I got to get up early to go to church. And he started laughing again. I was like, why is this a theme in my life? But he said, really? You do that? I said, yeah, I kind of work for a church. He's like, you work for a church? And I was like, yeah. He's like, but you're funny. I was like, well, thanks, I think. He's like, and you seem normal. I'm like, this isn't getting any better. And he said, well, it's just not who I normally think of when I think of it. Somebody who works for a church. And the thing about that is that, you know, it's not about, when I go hang out with these guys and when I do these shows with them, I'm not Anthony the care pastor. I'm not Anthony that works at Hoboken Grace. I'm just Anthony. And that's ultimately what Jesus is talking about here, is that he was one of them. He was one of them, and he was a welcomed addition to their posse. He was a welcome addition to their party. He was a welcome addition to their dinner. And he just said, hey, when the opportunity arised, talk about Jesus. There's another great illustration in the scriptures, and it comes from the Apostle Paul. And the Apostle Paul is actually writing this to the church in Corinth, right? It's the letter is popularly called the First Corinthians. And it's an interesting letter because the city of Corinth is at this time really the center of everything. It's a city where you go to make it, right? It's a city where you go to pursue your dreams. It's a city that's at the center of trade and commerce. Sound familiar? So it's a city where a lot of stuff is happening. But as a result of this, right, Paul is writing this letter to these churches in Corinth to remind them what they were called to do, remind them who Jesus Christ said that they were, remind them that they've got this responsibility. And you know, it's a great letter to read even this day and age, because some of us, when we lose our way, we have to go back to the source. And that's exactly what Paul is calling the people here in Corinth to do. He says this in 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 23. He says, "Though I'm free and belong to no one, I've made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but from under Christ's law, but I am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings." So what's he saying here? He says, well, first, it's important for you to know, if you don't know who Paul is, right? The Apostle Paul was not a member of Jesus' original posse, right? He was actually a member of the Pharisees, the people that were judging and telling everybody that Jesus was crazy. He was the chief person who was trying to get rid of Christianity. He wanted nothing to do with Jesus. He was throwing Christians into prison. He was slaughtering Christians. He was not the type of guy that you would think would ever become Christian, except he, much like Zacchaeus, also had an incredible encounter with the resurrected Christ, and his life was forever changed. And for the next 30 years, he spent his entire life preaching the message of Jesus Christ to the Roman Empire. And for the next 30 years, you know what he did? He hung out with people. He went to dinner parties. He went to dinners. He went to weddings. He hung out with people that were outside this church. And you can imagine the face of those Pharisees that he used to lead and hang out with before. They're like, wait a minute. You were trying to get rid of this, and now you're trying to get people to become believers? He was sharing meals with people who didn't believe the same thing that he believed. That's a shocker. For a first century Jewish rabbi, this was unheard of. This was unthinkable. It's the same thing that Jesus Christ was doing. It was just not normal. You just didn't do it, like putting fruit on pizza. You just don't do it. Why would you ruin pizza? What are you, a lot of you pineapple fans? Get out of town. When asked why he was doing this, he said, like Jesus, that he must what? Continue to seek and save the lost. When he was with Jewish people, he acknowledged and respected the Jewish way and the Jewish customs. When he was with the Gentiles, those are the people that were not under the law, he respected and acknowledged the Gentile way and customs. When he was with the weak, those are the weak in faith. Those are the people that have doubts, that have questions. He respected their weak faith and accepted them and talked with them and their way of life and accepted them and their customs. But he still hung out with them. And now let me make sure you understand this. This wasn't a ploy so that we can later just smack them over the head with the Bible, right? The reason being is, number one, the scriptures didn't exist in the way that we see it now, right? They didn't have the Bible back then. But number two, being with those who didn't know Jesus was literally the embodiment of this message of grace that we've been talking about, that we talked about last week. Just by being with those people, he was doing what Jesus Christ was calling him to do. Paul was literally saying, how can I preach a gospel? How can I preach the good news of Jesus Christ, that Jesus came for all, and not sit with Jewish people, non-Jewish people, and those who are not really sure what they believe? He's saying this is the message of it. And this is what we who have walked into this relationship with Jesus Christ, this is what we're called to do. This is what he tells the Corinthians in chapter 10. He says, so whatever you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews, Greeks, or the church of God, even as I try to please everyone in every way. For I am not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. You see, in the ancient Greek world, there was virtually all of these. One of the biggest questions they had in Corinth was that, you know, can they eat or can they drink with people whose meat is unclean, right? So in the marketplace, there was a lot of the Greek culture. There was a lot of these pagan gods, right? The little g gods, right? And what they would do is that these pagan priests would go and they would bless this meat and they would bring it to the marketplace. And those who subscribed to that culture would take this meat back, and they would be, you know, that's what they would use for their dinners, and that's what they would use for their food, right? And so the big question was for Jewish people and for Christian people, can we eat this meat that has been sacrificed to these pagan gods? This wasn't like, you know, what he's basically saying, hey Paul, what's going to happen if we get invited to a dinner party or a business associate's house and there's this unclean meat there? What do we do? This isn't like today where you can like bring your own Tupperware and be like, this is mine. I'll just eat this, you know? It wasn't like that, right? It was do you eat this meat that's been sacrificed to pagan gods and fear to taint yourself, or do you just ignore it and be cruel? Now, this is pretty much the same question that the Pharisees were asking. Why does he eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? Why is he doing this? Why is he defiling himself? And Paul is saying that it's not important what you eat and drink, he says, but whether you are seeking the good of others. Paul is saying, whatever we do, we should do for the glory of God. If it's going to bring glory for you to go, it's going to bring glory to God for you to go to that banquet, then go. If it's not going to bring glory to God by you going to that banquet, don't go. What he says in verse 32 is important. He says, do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews, Greeks, or the church of God. Now, he's not talking about tripping people, though you shouldn't do that either. But he's saying, throughout Paul's letters, when he's talking about causing people to stumble, he's telling you, listen, don't miss out on the opportunity. Don't miss out on the opportunity to let somebody know about Jesus Christ. Don't cause them to stumble. Don't cause anybody to miss out on salvation. He's saying that their action, don't mess up with, by your actions, don't miss the opportunity to show Jesus to them by either word or by action. Don't miss the opportunity. Don't do anything that would cause them to not believe in Jesus. And this powerful picture of what Jesus did and what Paul is calling us to do as he lived his life too, this is why incarnation is one of our core values here at Hoboken Grace. See, we believe and we know that God is not a distant God. God is one who came to be one of us, right? Here's how we, if you look up our core values on the website, this is what it says. Incarnation, separation was not acceptable to our Heavenly Father. In his mission of building his family, he became one of us. As his body, as the body of believers, we must do the same. We are here to impact the world around us. One of the questions we always ask on staff here at Hoboken Grace is, if Hoboken Grace was to close its doors tomorrow, who would know and who would care? Because if only the people that are sitting here or listening on the podcast or watching on live stream, if only the people here know that, then we would have failed. Then we would have failed, because here's the thing. If we believe that this is going to be a community of faith and a community of hope and a community of love amid our city, then our city should be better for it. Our community should be better for it. Our community should be different because of it. And that love is not just for us inside the body, inside this family. That love should radiate to the world around us. We partner with him through this idea of incarnation. Paul comes to this point in his ministry and he says, as you see me move, he's saying, listen guys, as you see me move into these different people group, the thing is that's crucial for me to understand is that I engage them, as part of their culture, and that they see me as one of them. Just as Jesus Christ became one of us, I become one of them. And it's important what he says in verse 22. He says, to the weak, I become the weak to win the weak. He says, when they look at him, they accept him. They're part of him. You're welcome to the party. You're a welcomed addition. He says, it wasn't enough for him that I thought that I was one of them. It was important that they thought that I was one of them. And what you're saying here is that we should be so part of this city that they consider us one of them, that there's this terrible stigma that it's this us versus them mentality. But it's important to distinguish also that Paul is saying to engage the culture, but that doesn't change who you are. He says, you've been bought. You are redeemed. You are his. But make no mistake of who you are. You know who you are. You have been called to engage in this culture, but in doing so, don't let it change who you are. He's saying, fall in love with people. Don't fall in love with the culture. And the things would literally come. Don't let the things change who you are by showing up to love people. And one of the tensions that we face, right? It's easier to be among people who agree with us. It's easier to be among people who think the same way that we do, right? It's easy to do that, right? But that mentality, that thinking that way is literally a threat to this idea of incarnation. Because at the center of this, if you think to yourself that I just want to be comfortable, I just want to be with people that think like I do and do what I do, it's you miss the point of what God is calling us to do. And if this is the way that you think, and I'll be honest, there are times that I think this way too, but that means that our faith, our engaging with what Jesus Christ is calling us to do, we need a remix. We need to go back and say, okay, this is why you are here. Historically, at Hoboken Grace, we used to say it this way, right? You need to go to more parties. You do. And some of you may think to yourself, well, I don't know, I don't get invited to parties. I'm not always talking about like there's a DJ and you're playing flip cup parties, all right? I'm talking about, listen, we just had a daughter, right? Eventually, we're going to have to be going to birthday parties. That's still the P word. Still got parties there. You got dinner parties. You know what? That's going out and being a part of this culture. One of the things my wife and I love to do is we like to sit on the stoop. We like to engage our neighbors. We like to engage those around us. That is part of being the embodiment. That's by going and taking your family to the park that you are open to the fact that God may place somebody in that park that may need to hear about the message of Jesus Christ. And that doesn't mean that you have to do this all on your own. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to sit there and be like, well, let me tell you the Greek word for Jesus. This just means to being open and honest. This is the question we need to be asking ourselves. Is your social life oriented toward the good of others? Being with them, befriending them, doing good to them, and speaking to them about Christ when the opportunity invites itself. Given the opportunity, are you prepared to tell people, hey, listen, this is what he's done in my life? I could think of no other. There's this beautiful example in this book by Max Lucado. It's called No Wonder They Call Him the Savior. And it's a story of this girl named Christina, and she's grown up in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and her mom is a single mom and trying to raise her, and you know, she's a teenager and she has these dreams of making it in the city. And at this time when they're telling the story, it's you as a young girl, when you go into the city, a lot of young women were having trouble finding jobs, and so a lot of them would end up in brothels, or they would end up in drug houses, and her mom, you know, obviously didn't want her to go into that. And one day, Christina, just unbeknownst to her mom, packed up and kind of ran away into the city. And her mom was absolutely devastated, and she hadn't heard from her in quite a while. And so she went out into the city, and one thing that she did is she had all these pictures of herself, right? The mom had pictures of herself, and on the back of each picture, she had written a little note in hopes that if Christina was ever to come across one of these pictures, she would see a picture of her mom and she would get it. And so one of the things that they did was that she would go into the city and she would take things like pictures of, she would put pictures in the diner, or she would put pictures in the restaurants, or she would put pictures, and then she started to fear the worst, so she would put pictures in brothels, and she would put pictures in these drug houses, and then she would go home just devastated. Until one day, sure enough, Christina stumbled down the staircase of a brothel that she was working at, and she saw a picture of her mom. And she took the picture off the wall, and she read the back of it, and it said this: whatever you've done, whatever you've become, please just come home. And she did. And as Max Lucado puts it, he says, what an incredible and beautiful picture of God's grace. And just as Jesus sought to save people like Zacchaeus, and he sat and had dinner with those who Jesus didn't think he should, he left countless snapshots of himself throughout the ages. These snapshots are you, and they're me. And attached to our image is the same image that Christina saw. Whatever you've done, whatever you've become, please just come home. By the way that we communicate to those around us, it's that the Lord's desire is for them to come home. We are the means by which, through God's Spirit and others, hear the call to come home to God. We are the snapshots of the incarnate God. We're going to do something together. Would you turn, bring the lights up just a little bit? Bring out your phones. Hello. Everybody bring out your phones. I'm not going to ask you to check in. I'm going to ask you to open up your photo app and take a selfie. Come on, you can duck face it, you can peace sign it, whatever you want. Just make it, you know, make it look good. Hey. Go ahead, do it. We're watching you. And I want you to take a look at that photo and take a moment and realize that God created you with a purpose. And if you've walked into this relationship with Jesus Christ, he put his Spirit in you. And that picture that you've just taken is a picture of the incarnate Christ, of the incarnate God. The God who came to be one of us is in you. And you carry with that photo the same message that Christina's mom had for her. Whatever you've done, whatever you've become, please, just come home. And if you've not walked into this relationship with Jesus Christ yet, you're invited to. You can look into that photo because what? He created you in his image too, and his message is the same to you. Whatever you've done, whatever you've become, just come home. And we take this picture with us, we take these snapshots out to the world around us, and we invite people into the moment that, hey, God is pursuing them. God is coming after them. And so when we go out into the world and we invite people to parties, or we go to these parties, or we invite people to come with us on Sunday, or we invite people into our group, or we invite people in to a connection event, we are literally doing what God has called us to do by being the embodiment of his Spirit, by going out and just inviting people to be a part of the party. We are literally the snapshots of Christ. And so as we take that with us, we can take this foundational truth to say, God, this is where the church began. This is how the church began. And this is how, with such an incredible force, people came to know who he was. And that God, in the person of Jesus Christ, came to seek and save the lost. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you for this message. Thank you for this message of faith. Thank you for Jesus Christ. Thank you for the image of him. Thank you for sending him, because without him, we would be lost. Father, my prayer today is that for those of us who are here today, that we will realize the incredible gift that you've given us. For those of us who've walked into this relationship with you, my prayer is that they will realize who that you've created them to be and what you've created them to do. And that if they're nervous and that makes them scared to go out, that they realize that they're not doing this on their own, They weren't saved on their own. They were saved by you. And when they go out to be for you and stand for you, that you are with them every step of the way. And my prayer is also for those who are here today or listening today that may not trust you yet, that may not know that they are forgiven, that may not know that you want them to come back home, that they will know beyond a shadow of a doubt that no matter what they've done, no matter what they've become, you want them to come back home. Father, we thank you for this picture of rescue. We thank you for this picture of salvation. We thank you for this picture of who Jesus Christ is, and that we may take this message to heart, and as a result, take this message to the world around us. And it's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.